The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey everyone, this is Matthew Cause. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And this is part one of a two-part podcast all centered around my trip to Spain and specifically to Rueda, which is about an hour and 45 minutes northwest of Madrid. And it is a white wine region. 99% of all the wine made is white, 1% Tempranillo. And of that 99% white wine, 86-88%, depends each year, is on a grape called Verdejo. And I'll explain really quick about this trip and what these podcasts are going to be about. I was invited as part of a wine media tour. We were invited by the DO Rueda. Think of it as the, you know, wines of Niagara, wines of Napa. This is the administrative group that overlooks all things Rueda wine, promotions, information, marketing, the selling of the wine, everything. So we were invited to help spread the word, to help communicate what these wines are about to consumers. And they're doing this all over the world. Like before our tour and after, there was people coming in from Russia, people coming in from China. So this was a Toronto contingent. And the idea being, like, communicate back to Ontario, to Toronto, what these wines are all about. So what you're going to hear in this in these podcasts is you're going to hear interviews with some winemakers and wine owners from a variety of bodegas in Rueda. You'll hear some journals, some audio journals of mine, also interviewing one of the wine writers that came on this trip. Conrad Ijbik will be part of it as well. I was really skeptical about Verdejo. I didn't know a lot about it. And one of the first things you learn in wine when you start studying wine is you don't know as much as you think. The wine universe can be a humbling one because the moment you think you have a good handle on it, you suddenly are exposed to a multitude of new regions, appellations, producers, and grape varieties. My thoughts about Verdejo was that it was the Pinot Grigio of Spain. It would be a light, refreshing, crisp white wine, but really wouldn't offer a lot of depth and complexity. And I was wildly wrong. It's one of the main things I enjoyed about this trip, beyond being able to see a part of the world I've never seen and be able to travel in Madrid. I got to learn a lot about a grape, and that's fantastic. And I hope a lot of people listening to this podcast are listening because they want to learn about wine. Well, I certainly learned about wine. And the Verdejo grape, as you'll hear in these interviews, because, you know, it's one of the themes I talk about, is the stereotype of Rueda and how the Verdejo grape doesn't get the credit it deserves. It's very versatile. Even when it's just the young, simple version, there is a level of depth in the mid palate, and there is some fennel sometimes and herb, and there's like bitter, nutty finish that's really good. But these wines can accept and take oak in a good way, and they're often aged on their lees for 3, 4, 5 months, which add structure and more complexity. Some of these wines I tried, I would describe as elegant. Some of them would be a great alternative, not just to bad Italian Pinot Grigio. And by the way, let me say this about Pinot Grigio. There's lots of great versions out there. We just don't get a lot of it here in Ontario. And I just find that grape very simple. It's like liquid cold. It's an alcohol delivery system with lemon lime. And there's a place for that. I'm not saying there's not a place for it, but if you want to try something that is similar to Pinot Grigio, but with more depth and around the same price, I think Verdejo is an excellent choice. And you're going to hear that theme throughout this podcast. I also think it's important, and one thing I, you know, again, this was reiterated, the importance of walking through vineyards, looking at the vines, feeling the soil, feeling the sun and the wind. It really gives you a better sort of understanding or a greater appreciation of what is in the glass. And we would be visiting some crazy vineyards, and I'll talk more about it later. And also, I appreciated the fact that all these wineries, they put the same time and attention as you would find anywhere else. And it's not just stainless steel. You know, they use a variety of different types of oak, even new French oak, concrete eggs, the same high-end technology, the same attention to detail that you would see at the finer, you know, Burgundy houses and Napa or Sonoma. It's all there. So this trip certainly changed my opinion of the area of Rueda. It certainly changed my opinion of this grape. I have a much more appreciation for it now. I think aged Verdejo is this beautiful, honeyed, complex, striking wine. And it only has to be aged for 5-6 years. And we tried a whole bunch of examples from around 2014. And that was also part of the learning experience. So enough gas bagging from me. I want to get right to it. In part one, you are going to hear interviews from Marcos Hierra from the Bodega Hierra. Winemaker Herman. Herman from Campo Elysio. And then you are going to be hearing a conversation with Conrad Ijbik, who has been a wine writer, journalist for decades and decades. And on our little wine media tour, he was absolutely the smartest guy on this trip. I mean, blew me away with his level of knowledge. I want to give a shout out to Jessica Glover, who is the one who put this trip together, and Glow Communications. That's her PR company. She did a fantastic job. I call her a destroyer of problems. If there was a problem, she solved it. And there really wasn't any. This was a really smooth, wonderful, fantastic trip. We had some great meals, had some great wine, saw beautiful things. And then, yeah, I also have to give a shout out to the DO Rueda. They set it up. They set up, as I said, great restaurants, hotels, and more importantly, gave us a far greater understanding of this white wine region of the world. Another thing you'll appreciate about this podcast, you think I've screwed up names in the past, I take it to another level. You're going to hear it in this opening interview. I think I make about 4 pronunciation mistakes in less than a minute. And this opening interview at the Bodega Hierra, we do it from the Marcos, the one of the owners. We do it from his restaurant, which is actually underneath the winery. It's really cool. And underneath the winery, there's this cool maze. It's all centered around the Greek mythology story of the Minotaur. Let's go to the Minotaur. Really super cool place. If you're in Madrid, go to this area, check it out, Rueda. And if you can find this vineyard, you'll absolutely love it. It's a really cool tour. So let's pick it up with that interview. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. I'm here at Igela, which is in Rueda, and I'm with one of the owners. I'm with Marcos. Marcos, thank you so much for joining me.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing great. I was wondering if you could first do me a favor, because I have the worst pronunciations.
No problem.
I mispronounce my own name.
Igela. Igela. Yeah.
Okay.
Igela. That's it.
And how do you pronounce your last name?
Marcos Igela.
Perfect. Okay, perfect, because I'm so bad at that kind of stuff. And we are here in Rueda, and we've...
Rueda.
Rueda.
That's it.
Ah, see, I'm going to screw it all
up. I know it's difficult. Yeah. It's difficult.
Oh, it totally is. So I want to first just, if you could tell the listeners, because this goes more of a North American audience, certainly Canadian, just what makes the Verdejo grape so good? What is it about it that works so well here?
Well, this grape has been planted in this land since centuries. There's a big history. So the vineyard is a plant, is one of the plants that adapt better to the soil mm-hmm. where it's grown. And after centuries, this plant, this variety of grape has adapted very well to the soil. This soil is poor soils. They have clay on the ground, and they have sand and a lot of stones mm-hmm. in the surface. Verdejo is very, very well adapted here, as well as Sauvignon Blanc. And the reason, I don't know the reason why, is, I don't know, is this is a question of ampeología. It's like why the Merlot is so well adapted to the Pomerol.
Yeah.
So
okay.
In France, so it's original from here, and I could say that Verdejo may be like the national white grape of Spain.
Mm-hmm.
Every single bar or restaurant in Spain, normally they have a bottle of Rioja, a bottle of Ribera del Duero and a bottle of Rueda.
Yeah, it's so true, and I've certainly experienced that here. And what I found interesting is even at this winery or some of the others we've been to, same grape, same wine, same vineyards, but yet so different. And
different, yes.
Just the expression from sort of that young, fruity, youthful, vibrant versus, you know, one that's been aged on lees, yes, which is a little more bitter, a little more honey, a little more almond, and then the ones with barrique. I was wondering just if you're going to describe what the taste of this wine is and what it is good for in terms of food.
Normally, the verdejo normally is typical aromas of the verdejo is green apple, mm-hmm, normally. And depending on the soil and depending on the winery or the company, it can go from tropical, which we don't like too much.
Yeah.
Using this new lees, the new selected yeast that are giving this, for me, boring tropical aromas to stone fruit like peach or apricot that we like more. And then when you swallow the wine, it has a ending of bitter ending, like a bitter almond, very elegant, that makes your mouth water, and it's like your mouth is asking for a new sip.
It's so true. You're right. Like, it's something I'm so glad, even just the last couple of days, that nutty bitterness at the end. It's something I wasn't really that used to, and it's been
big body in the mouth. It's not a light white that you swallow and it finishes the taste. It stays a long time in the mouth, and new elaborations like the one that you were mentioning, the fermented with the lees or aged with the lees or barrel aged, they have a very, very nice body in the mouth and big structure. So it's a very, very versatile wine with food. Of course, it's very nice with seafood, with, you know, any kind of fish. But I also say it's very good with meat, white meat.
Yeah.
Like chicken or like baby lamb.
Mm-hmm. We had it today. We had the baby lamb chop with a couple different, 100% Verdejo, one that's been barrique aged.
The Champagne method, sparkling wine also with Verdejo grape is nice too. So it's very versatile. Is the word versatile?
Yeah.
With a lot of food. I like it with fish and I like it with seafood. But sometimes winemakers or the people in the wine business too close mind and say, red wines go with meat or with cheese, white wines go with fish. No, drink wine with whatever you want.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever you like. And my dad, for example, he drinks white wine with meat.
Yeah.
Or red wine with shrimps. Why not?
And, you know, you can get a light Pinot or a Mencia or, you know, Gamay, and it goes, you know, it can go perfectly well with fish. Your barrique wines go with almost any of the meats.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit just about you and your family and the winery here. We've done the full tour, the Minotaur tour. It's gorgeous. The restaurant is beautiful, and it's below ground, something we're not used to in North America.
Yeah.
Usually the restaurants are well above ground. This one's below, and it's a very different sort of feel to it. But I'd be curious just a little bit of the history of you and the winery.
Yeah, we are 12 meters below the ground level. So my brother and me, we are the sixth generation of winemakers.
Mm-hmm.
My father, even my great-grandfather, great-grandfather, great-great-grandfather, they used to make wine. They used to make white wine, Verdejo, and they used to sell it in bulk, in a leather bag, in a cart with mules, village through village. But my father started bottling the wines in the 70s, 10 years before the old was created. So we are pioneers in this area. The other question is the story of family.
Mm-hmm.
And now my brother and me are running the company.
Yeah.
We have four different wineries now. One is this, the other one is the winemaking facility outside the village. And we have two wineries in Ribera del Duero. One is in Boada de Roa, very close to Aranda, Roa de Duero, and the other one is in Curiel de Duero, between Peñafiel and Pesquera. So, growing, traveling, yesterday I was in Vilnius, in Lithuania.
Mm-hmm.
To, today here.
Yeah.
And tomorrow, who knows?
Who knows? You must have like a lot of frequent flyer miles on your...
No. I used to do it more when I was younger.
Yeah. So you do. Okay. So you don't travel as much as when you were younger.
Yes.
I've been trying to think of where these wines fit in the Canadian palate. Because a lot of this really people don't really know as well in Ontario as they obviously do here or other parts of Europe. And I was thinking that, you know, the Verdejo would be a wonderful alternate if you're tired of Italian Pinot Grigio or New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. That's far too aggressive.
Correcto.
It feels like these wines are what people should try if they're looking for something different.
Correcto. You are very, very correct. You have mentioned the two, let's say, not competitors, but the two alternatives for the Verdejo,
mm-hmm.
the Pinot Grigio, which normally, I think, in general, is not exception.
Mm-hmm.
In general, Pinot Grigio is a little bit lower quality than Verdejo. And the New World Sauvignon Blanc, the New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, which sometimes you get bored mm-hmm. of these tropical aromas.
It can be very aggressive sometimes, a little too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Verdejo is the perfect alternative for those wines.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, very true.
And I think, like, I've tried some that I haven't really loved, some of the barrique aging ones. I enjoyed yours more because the wood wasn't overwhelming, you know, the stone fruit characteristics that I want. And I was sort of thinking that your barrique aged Verdejo, for the person who likes Chardonnay but wants to venture out.
Yes.
It's like, okay, you want to try something a little bit different, but you still want some of that Chardonnay feel.
Sure.
That wine would seem to make the most sense.
Especially our wine, the tested, I think, Illera Barrel Fermented.
Yep.
We don't want it to be so over-oaky. We prefer to maintain the fruit aroma, mm-hmm. being the oak behind. And the oak is also giving very nice structure in the mouth. But you are very true when you say that it's also a good alternative to the for example, California Chardonnay or this oaky Chardonnay. To be honest, I prefer the Verdejo, the over oak Chardonnay. I love Borgogna. Eh? I love mm-hmm. Burgundy. I love the Chardonnays in Burgundy, Chablis, all this stuff.
Of course.
But the over oak Chardonnay, Verdejo is a very, very good alternative.
I'll leave you with one more question because I know you're super busy. You got a big group in from America, and you just came in here. Where would you like to be? And like for the winery, is there different? What are your goals for the next 5-10 years? Either in terms of global reach, in terms of grapes quality. What is there anything? Is there any goals that you're looking for?
Now our heart and our mind is located in a new project in Ribera del Duero.
Mm-hmm.
We bought a new cellar in the year 2015.
Oh, yeah.
And we have hired Jean-Claude Berruet, which is winemaker of Chateau Petrus.
Oh.
During 45 years.
Oh, okay.
And he's coming to make our new wines in Ribera del Duero.
Yeah.
The wine is going to be, the name is going to be Vivaltus.
Mm-hmm.
That's for the people to know. The wine is going to be out in the market next year. But we have, before bottling the wine, we have had a lot of very good reviews.
Mm-hmm.
95 points Parker, 97 Matkin.
So that's Ribera del Duero. So the blend is 100% Tempranillo. Is there
Tempranillo with Cabernet Sauvignon?
With Cabernet Sauvignon.
Yeah. And the contact and the knowledge of this man, he has changed our life. We are also changing our winemaking methods in Reda for the white wines after his contact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, looking for more longevity, elegance. We don't want to make, now in Ribera del Duero, we don't want to make heavy wines. We want elegant, soft, delicate, harmonious.
Which has sometimes been the problem of that area, Rioja, the stereotype of the bad ones, just overly oak, too much vanilla,
oak,
cinnamon, things like that, and you're sort of getting away from the fruit profile.
We are going away of that.
Yeah.
Now we want finesse
mm-hmm.
and longevity and elegance.
Yeah.
And we are so happy with the results, and the wine will be in the market next year, and we hope it's going to be a, you know, something very, very special.
Fingers crossed. Hey, first, Marcos, thank you so much for doing this. I was wondering, if you could just promote your winery, the wines. If people are in the area, if they're in Segovia, if they're in Madrid, they should come and visit you guys. Where do they go?
Look for Higuera, mm-hmm. internet, Y-double-L-E-R-A. And in Higuera, they will look, we were first, they can come to visit this place, this cellar, underground cellar, or they can visit Vivaltus, or they can visit, everything is online, mm-hmm. so on the web, and I just want people, I would like people to taste the wine, mm-hmm. and then decide if I like or not, because once you taste, I'm sure that we will win.
I got to tell you, as someone who's not the biggest fan of Sauvignon Blanc from New World or Pinot Grigio, I was wondering what I was going to get into, and I've been pleasantly surprised, especially by the range of taste, profile, and flavor. It's an early trip for me so far, but it's been fantastic. Thank you so much, Marco. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And all the Canadians that are listening to this are very, very welcome.
Yeah. It's beautiful country. I recommend everyone coming and checking out. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, next on the list, my first winemaker. I got to interview a couple of them on the trip. This is Hermain, and I got to say, his English far better than my Spanish. And one thing I always felt bad for, I'd be doing these interviews, and so many people would apologize for their English, and which made me feel so guilty because their English is great, and my Spanish is basically, it's non-existent. This was a smaller little vineyard that we went to, a really cool one. It was like in the middle of this village, and you wouldn't even realize that you were in a winery. And really smart guy, and a really interesting conversation about winemaking and about his journey. Enjoy.
I'm in Heredia here in Spain, and I'm with Hermain Nieto, who's now going to pronounce his name properly. Thank you so much, a winemaker here. I was wondering, again, for the audience, if you could just pronounce your full first and last name, because I'm horrible at it, and you're great at it, and the winery that we're at right now.
Yeah, our winery is called the Campo Elysio. Mm-hmm. It's a cellar who the owner is François Lurton and Jacques Michel Roland. Mm-hmm. Is the project who...
Wait, Jacques and Michel Roland? They're part of the... Oh, yeah, Yes, I read that. We'll get into that in a second. Sorry, continue.
Yeah. Well, start with the cellar in 2016. Mm-hmm. This is our third harvest. And, well, the project is something special. It's something that is not the same as the other wineries here in Rueda. We try to keep the essence of the grapes, of the terroir, into the bottle. We make... a cellar that is not a big building with a big stainless steel tank. We are in the center, in the middle of the small village called La Seca, here in the Dio Rueda. Mm-hmm. And we try to make the things in a different way.
It's sneaky. Like, we were pulling up, it looks like you're just in someone's home. And then you start walking around, and then we go down to the cellar, which is, you know, flight after flight after flight of stairs. It's really impressive here. So this was your third vintage here?
It's my second vintage
second
here.
Vintage
this is
here?
The third vintage of the cellar. But mm-hmm. I arrived here in April of 2017.
And what were you doing before?
I work in another two cellars, big cellars here in Rueda. I worked for 6 years in Hijos de Antonio Barceló, mm-hmm. and previously 6 years more in Félix Solís, a big, the second biggest producer in Spain.
So what's it like for you as a winemaker when you go from the big giant one to, I mean, you guys don't make, you have a big name, and Lurton and Roland are part of it, but what's the difference when you're going from a big giant company to one that's much, much smaller?
Yeah, well, it's an... It's a trouble for myself because I spent 6 years in Félix Solís working very hard. It's difficult to my... In 2016, I made a harvest of 30 million kilos.
Oh!
Wait,
how many? Say that again. How many?
13 million kilos.
Oh, my God.
Six in Rueda and... Six in Toro, sorry, and seven in Rueda.
Yeah.
And you are... Focus in the production. You need to produce each day 10,000 boxes and one day and one again. And you you are losing a little bit the essence of your of the winemaker. That is the thing that that I want to do. And finally, you need to fall in love again with the winemaking.
Yeah.
And when you listen to François talk about his vineyard, to talk about his wines, it's something completely different. And finally, the wine is something very, very different. It's not like a bottle. It's not like a label. And it's the essence. It's the grape transferred to a bottle. And for me, it's when I talk with François, it's not a false word. I love these words, and it's something to be fall in love again with the winemaker. And in these 2 years, I am very happy here, and it's to recover
yeah.
your studies. It's very difficult to pass to have a good wine of a 9 wine to try to fight to have the 10.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult, and it's a big challenge for me.
Yeah, and I guess before it was more about economics and production and get it done. Now it's more just about, okay, how do we make the best version of what this grape and this soil represents?
And also with the personal life. For sure, here I have, in these 2 years, I have a nice child.
Mm-hmm.
And well, it's another style, it's another kind of wine. It's another style of process. Well, it's the night and the day. It's yeah. completely different.
Well, talk to me a little bit about, and I want to ask you about, just for people listening, who François Lerton is and Michel Roland, and I'll do that in a second, but just this area is known for Verdejo. That is the number one grape in this area. As a winemaker, how would you describe what this grape is and what it can bring in the glass?
Well, the Verdejo is the variety who was here since a lot of time, but begins to be recognized in the end of 2000, and the explosion of the sales of Verdejo arrives with the big groups comes here to the Dio Rueda. But the big companies comes here for something. It's mm-hmm. nothing. Verdejo is a magnificent variety. It's something that we need to discover more, because we use the Verdejo for a wine for 1 year, and this is a wine who can keep and following the time aging in barrel and bottle, and this is something that it's a reality. But there is something who can discover different ways to vinify and other things that for the moment the Verdejo are not know for.
It's very versatile, just in terms of the way it can express itself, just from its light and fruity stainless steel version versus proper use of oak aging. It's a versatile grape, isn't it?
Well, it's you taste this wine and you can feel this kind of flavors. It's the elegance of the a good vinification with the strong of this bitterness in the end, this kind of flavors that give Verdejo.
Yeah, it's that bitterness in the end. That's like when I'm trying to describe it, you know, because it's a aromatic wine that when young, there's fruit, but there's not like this crazy depth. So I'm trying to find the right ways to explain it to people and like the characteristics. And one of them is, as you just said, just that nutty, sometimes bitterness at the end. That's something that gives this wine a sort of unique character from, say, other grapes that might be similar, like Sauvignon Blanc or Pinot Grigio. That's one thing I've noticed in the Verdejo versus some of the other grapes.
Yeah, in the nose, basically, it's the herbal flavors, different Verdejos in the Dio Rueda. Some of them are... these flavors come from the grapes or come from the fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
Depends the yeast. There are some wineries who use commercial yeast who have more tropical flavors, pineapple, banana, something like that. It's not very typical from Verdejo, but the people who use natural yeast have this kind of flavors, herbal, this the descriptor here in Spain is Hinojo. It's a silver plant who was in the here in this region and smell like that, something like anise. This kind of flavor is typical of Verdejo, and for sure in the mouth, this end a little bit bitter. It's nothing bad. It's a point of bitterness who give longer in the mouth. It's nothing. It's not a bad descriptor.
It's interesting you're talking about the yeast, and for people who don't know, yeasts are used to help kick off fermentation, to help bring certain flavors to wine. And we tried, we were at their headquarters, and we tried 15, 16 different Verdejos. And there was one in particular where I'm like, I'm getting a lot of banana here. So then when I smell and taste that, then I should assume that they use commercial yeasts and it wasn't just natural yeasts, correct?
Yeah, well, there are different vinification, and I don't know the rest, which is the way of work. Here we use only natural yeast.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to vinify this kind of wines in this cellar. You know, you need to go down to the cave and 12 degrees, and well, the vinification is not easy, but it's finally the way, the style that the wine of that you want. If you have banana in the wine,
good chance it's commercial.
Probably it's not I'm not sure 100%, but probably it's commercial yeast.
What's the toughest part about being a winemaker? What for you is the most stressful part of a year?
The most, sorry?
Stressful. What part is fills you with worry?
The end of fermentation.
Oh yeah?
For me, to have a fermentation sure, it's very easy to use a commercial yeast and 10 days is done.
Yeah.
But here we need to put the wine in barrel. We decrease to the cave 14 meters deep. And then the temperature is around 12 degrees. And the end of fermentation with indigenous yeast, when the concentration of alcohol is highest and the level of sugar is down with the yeast who are dead time by time, well, it's difficult, but it's a nice challenge. It's another way to vinify, and you need to be patient. And, well, it's the more complicated day. Point. Also, the time of or the moment to vinify, to pick, to make the harvest.
Yeah.
Because if you can't use, well, cannot, but if you decide not use commercial yeast or acidify or these kind of things, it's very important to have a good acidity, and the moment of the harvest is another complicated point.
And what's the most nervous thing for you in terms of Mother Nature? Like in Ontario, we can have frost and extreme cold and things like that. What's the most difficult part of growing wine in Rida?
For me, it's the rain around harvest.
Yeah.
Because, well, the frost is a pity. If now, today, 5th of May, have a frost, it's a real pity. But if you work all the year for the harvest and you concentrated the rains around these days and begins to the appreciation of botrytis or of this kind of maladies, well, it's a real pity. It's a problem.
So what's the connection? Obviously, they're the owners, but I was wondering if you could tell people a little bit about Lorton, François Lorton, who's a big name in the world of French wine, and Michel Roulon, who also has made, you know, one of the greatest wine consultants out there. I was wondering if you could tell people a little bit about them.
The first point is to invite the people to come here and see the project.
All right, where do they go? Let's give you guys a plug, because we've had a beautiful tour and a wonderful tasting, and you're in this like small little winery. It feels like you're in someone's home, is what it feels like here. It's gorgeous. Where do people go if they want to come here?
Yeah, well, in this region it's very rich. We are very close to Medina del Campo with his castle. Mm-hmm. Tordesillas is a very nice village here, with a lot of tradition, a lot of history.
Yep.
And also La Seca have a very nice views with our vineyards. Well, finally we are 30 kilometers to Valladolid, and it's very close, and it's a very good place to visit, I think.
Yeah, La Seca, we've just been driving through. It's gorgeous. And what about Lurton? What is what's his background? Like, I want to give the people listening some idea just about François' background. What has he meant to French wine?
Well, François is a guy who have a brilliant head with a lot of ideas, a capacity of work incredible, and are around the world. François have a lot of commercial work in different countries, and also a technical work because supervise all the harvest here in Spain, in his domains, and in France, in Chile, Argentina. Here to Spain arrives during the harvest, are here, living here in our cellar for a long time.
Yeah.
And then during the year comes here for make the blends, and are each day have a mail asking about the things, about the vineyards, are focused in everything. It's incredible.
And last question for you. And again, really appreciate you chatting for the podcast. What are you drinking now? What's your favorite? You know, what's your favorite wine to open up on a Saturday night?
Well, it's a difficult question.
Yeah, give me a couple.
Depends
of
the moment. It depends for the dinner, for take a glass with the friends, or
yeah.
For a dinner, for sure, Campo Elíseo Verdejo for me it's something great.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very good wine. It's a complex, have a intensity for support different types of food. But for take with the friends, a glass of La Perdiz, Hermanos Lurton La Perdiz, or Campo Alegre Cuvée, Campo Elíseo Cuvée Alegre should be a good option also.
Thank you, Herman. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. It's been great talking to you, and it's been great learning more about this area, about Verdejo. We had our first rosé that was really good, a nice sort of spicy red berry thing going on, and really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, and you are welcome when you return again.
I would highly recommend to everyone, if you're touring around Spain, to come check out La Seca, come to Segovia, check out Heredia. This is a really beautiful area, and having a fantastic time.
And finally, at the hotel that I was staying at, I did a couple personal recordings. You'll hear my audio journal. I don't know why I keep saying audio. Of course, it's audio. It's a podcast. You know, next you'll hear me writing something. So in part two of the Rueda podcast, you will hear my audio journal. But right after I did that, I got a chance to interview one of the people on the trip. Here is wine writer, wine journalist, Conrad Ijbik. I am joined by Conrad Ijbik. Conrad, explain to everyone just how long you've been doing this. You are the OG, and that was not old guy. That was the original gangster on this trip.
Well, I've been doing this since the previous millennium. No, I started in 78. I discovered wine, and by the next year, I was started to writing about it.
And yeah, so you've written for. I want people to know the resume of Conrad here. Usually when I do interviews, I have like a couple weeks of time to prep and stuff for it. This one's a little bit more fly by the seat of the pants. So I want people to know just everything about you.
Not much to say. I started off as a news photographer. Was working in a variety of cities. Ended up in Ottawa, where I got married, where I started living after I got married. My wife was also working in radio with CBC. And a couple of years after we had moved there, she was recognized for her outstanding resourcefulness and amazing abilities, and was seconded to Morningside. So
yeah. It
meant we had to move to Toronto.
Yeah.
Well, first thing we did when we went to Toronto, I thought I could move my business there, my photo business, but there was as much work in Ottawa as there was in Toronto, and 10 times the number of people struggling to get it.
Yeah, that seems
to
happen
in Toronto.
A real clique
at the top in the magazine business. So,
oh, really?
So it was hard to get there. I started working at the racetrack doing photographs of the horses crossing the line and just continuing my wine hobby.
Mm-hmm.
And a few months later, an ad appeared in the newspaper for a wine rep. And I completely ignored it, figuring I'm just a hobbyist. I don't know anything. And the fellow that I was working with at the racetrack just kept pushing me, go, hey, answer this ad, answer this ad. So about a month after it appeared, I did answer it. I called up Anthony von Mandel.
Okay,
and,
yeah.
And said, yeah. Oh, I've been out of the country for a month, and I've just been reading some papers, and I saw this newspaper, and I was wondering if the position is still available.
Yeah.
Well, it was, but just by a day. So, well, I was just closing today, but send me a resume, and I'll get you in. He liked it. I was a little strange to him, but he thought that was good. He didn't want a salesman.
Yeah.
He wanted somebody who knew wine. So they tested me, and, you know, I had three meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, they showed me some labels. I described what they were. Another one, they gave me a blind tasting, and I described all the wines.
Hold on. So your job interview, it was like a SOM competition.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
Well, not quite. I mean, I didn't but the elements
are all part of any sort of competition. That's great.
They did not want a salesperson. They wanted somebody who understood wine and understood the culture of wine, and they would teach them to sell.
Yeah.
Okay, so for 4 years, I worked with Anthony von Mandel,
mm-hmm.
and Anthony was a little brash and had upset a couple of people at the liquor board.
Yeah.
And unbeknownst to me, they were never going to give Anthony a listing as long as they were in power.
Really?
Yeah. So for 4 years, I struggled trying to get in, you know, made sales in other restaurants, in other areas, in restaurants and hotels. For 3 years, we won the Beaujolais Nouveau race.
Mm-hmm.
We won it because we created it.
What is
we didn't race against anybody else.
Oh, that
the idea was to get the very first wine of the vintage into your country so people could taste.
Yeah.
And that would be Beaujolais. Yeah. Beaujolais Nouveau.
Yeah.
So no one had heard of Beaujolais Nouveau, so we created a campaign, and 3 years in a row we won it.
Congratulations. I won it 3 years.
Thanks.
Who came in second? Was it Washington
there was
Generals?
No second. There
came
was
in
no second. Second.
Yeah. So that's
it was
what,
just us and the press and photography and that's and, you know, hoo-ha promotion.
So you created a fake event so that you could win it 3 years in a row.
And by the third
Love
year,
it.
They banned us from racing.
Yeah.
Okay. So we beat them by bringing in a wine from British Columbia, beating Beaujolais Nouveau. But we created this huge hoo-ha, and for the next 4 or 5 years, there were lineups at the liquor board in November, and then the liquor board took it over, and it collapsed.
Yeah. Well, that's right, kind of what usual. The liquor board is sort of the Debbie Downer often of the wine world.
So that was some of the early work. And then after 4 years, I told Anthony there was no hope.
Mm-hmm.
And we shut down the company for a few years. I left. I started doing something else. I opened a magazine. I created a magazine called The Wine Times. And basically, I don't want to sound too vain, but I changed a bit of what publishing about wine was. Because if I had an odd way of looking at it, I, you know, brought in a lot of new things, and other magazines started copying what I was doing.
Yeah.
And after a year, we're actually making a bit of a profit, but it was emotionally draining, and physically and emotionally draining. It almost ruined my marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to keep the marriage instead of the magazine.
Smart.
Yeah. And then I joined Chenlis Canada. Chenlis was the eighth largest distillery in Canada, but they had a huge wine portfolio, and I became their national wine consultant. And for 5 years, I was a national wine consultant. We had Antonori and Bola and Veuve Clicquot and Aje from Spain, Aje, Siglo Aje, a number of great brands, Mateus. I learned to like what people call Mateus.
Yeah.
Because I discovered it was actually brilliantly made wine, and that's why it sold so much. It's because it was so good. Just most people by that time had started to poo-poo the wines.
Yeah.
So it was whatever. Matus was pretty good wine, and still is today. If you want to go out there and try it, go out and buy a bottle and see how good it is.
And if you don't like it, it didn't really cost you much money anyway.
No, of course not, but it's really, that's why it was so big. Same thing with Blue Nun and a few of the others.
Oh, yeah,
they're
yeah.
so well made mm-hmm. that people like them.
By the way, as we're talking, it's now raining. This is the first bit of rain we've had since we landed here, I guess, early Saturday morning.
You should mention that we are in Spain, in Rueda.
I did. I said off the top. I said okay, this is part of the Rueda edition of the pod. So let's talk a little bit about the wines. Just what were some of your initial thoughts of some of the of all the, because we've tried so much Verdejo now.
Yep.
We're not going to go through all of it. That would be
possible.
No one wants to hear 25 different tasting notes. But what are some of your just general thoughts?
Well, general thoughts, not so much on the individual wines, but on the region and the wine in general. And that is that I was surprised by how good it is.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting, you know, a mid to average low end wine from Spain, white from Spain, you know, forget it. Rioja's important. Yeah. Gatoso's important. You know, some of those other areas are important. Sherry's important. What's, you know, Rueda? It's just some white wine. Well, no, it's a wine made from the Verdejo grape. And the Verdejo grape, some people think might be related to Gruner Veltliner, for those who understand the style of Gruner Veltliner. It has good fruit, quite stiff, solid, certainly not tannic character, but a minerality and a saltiness.
Yeah.
That gives it a real firm structure. But in there, you've got a depth of fruit and a depth of character, real complexity. And I found that these wines are exceptional as food wines. Not just with what you would expect to go with, you know, white wine, white meat, white fish, etc. But we've had pork, we've had lamb,
mm-hmm.
we've had cheeses, we've had soups with sharp tomato flavors, we've had spicy charcuterie, we've had foie terrine. Yeah, and you know, rich, thick, oily, subtle, spicy, even the vegetarian things that we had went really well with. So
yeah.
So and the price is the next part that you got to talk about, in that these are absolutely affordable wines, better than most of what you're getting at the same price level.
Yeah, and it would be, and I agree with everything you said there, especially you're right about the price. One of the things that amazed me was also just the different expressions of the grape, because we went in with the same expectations, and there are the youthful, fresh, vibrant, zippy acidity, lot of fruit on the nose and the palate, and grapefruit and that kind of stuff, peach and that kind of stuff. But then the ones that have been, you know, a little bit
of oak age, older vines, you know, harder soils, tougher soils, like harder areas.
The older vine ones would be, you know, even 2018, the older vine ones, okay, more mineral, more bitter, a little bit of nut, or the surly, like the ones where they keep it on the leaves.
The textural thing where they're almost oily.
Yeah.
Right. And at the same time, they retain the minerality, that chalky base that gives a dry finish.
Yeah.
And really works well with most foods.
And the one that I think impressed me the most, and we can, you know, was the winers we're at today. And again, it is Tuesday, May 7th. And on my personal journal, man, did I screw up the pronunciation. The last place we were at where we had the 2014, 16, and 18.
It was Finca Monpedroso.
Yeah.
Finca Monpedroso, which is owned by Pilar and Carlos Martinez Bujanda family.
So you
own
do
like
that.
Five wineries in Spain, and this is one. This is an interesting winery because they do only one thing.
Yeah.
They do one thing, they make one wine, and that's Verdejo, and they do a brilliant job.
Yeah.
The three wines we had today
were great. They were
terrific.
Yeah, 14, 16, and 18. They're all great. The 14 is the one I want to talk about for a second, because this was like, I love Chardonnay.
Yeah.
Chardonnay might be my favorite grape. And I love the, there's a powerful, you know, intense, you know, Burgundy or still sometimes well-made versions in here.
I agree with Burgundy. In fact, I'll go precisely to Meursault.
Yep.
Chassagne-Montrachet in that range, but old, like at least 15, 20 years old, mm-hmm. where you get that golden color, that rich, oily, honeyed texture.
Yep.
The honeyed nuts is, to me, the real key.
And that's what we got. Some of my notes for the 14, cooked honey, nutty note, brown butter, a term you came up with. I'm giving you credit for that.
I didn't come up with it.
No,
I used it here,
and it clicked. But then on the note, like on the palate also, lemon meringue. Like these are some of the
grilled
notes.
Grilled lemon, yeah.
Yeah, like, and that 14 was probably about €20. Which is not cheap, but not crazy expensive. But
for the quality of the wine, it's
for the
cheap.
Quality of the wine, it's incredibly cheap. And that was one of the wines where I sort of had a really aha moment. I mean, I had a bunch earlier in the day and a couple times on Monday.
But this brought everything together.
Exactly. 100%.
Everything together in one wine. It had a gorgeous golden color. It had a rich, vibrant, complex nose, honeyed.
Yeah.
And then the taste was full mouth, full fruit. Just full-blown everything.
Yeah.
With that solid, chalky finish.
What do you think, what are your expectations for the next couple days?
None.
Yeah?
None. I don't have expectations.
Oh, that's right, you don't. You don't have expectations. Like, you don't have expectations, you don't rank, you keep all your personal thoughts.
No, I do rank.
You do, right? But you don't. When do you release those?
Or
I don't
share that. That's for my personal. I give people the descriptions.
Yeah.
Because I don't want people judging according to points. And points are individual.
Mm-hmm.
I may score lower than most people, but I score according to Wine Spectator methods. So a couple points lower than what you see, but what I consider to be fairer.
Mm-hmm.
That's just personal. But I don't share that because people say, well, you gave it 88, it should be a 90.
Yeah.
No, it had this, and it really was not an outstanding, great wine. It was just a very good wine.
For people, because I always like to, when I think about this trip and what I want to do, and it's not I want to tell people, get rid of all your other wines. You should just drink Rueda. My thought is if you're in the world of Pinot Grigio, or if you're in the world of New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc,
or if you're in the world of boring Chardonnay.
Or if you're in the world of boring Chardonnay. Or even if you're in the world of Chardonnay, but you want to try something different, you can find well-made barrique versions. Or I should say barrique, like older oak. They don't use a lot of new oak. There's some, but it's not 100% French oak all the time. That the Verdejo grape could be great for someone who's bored with Ontario or the Pinot Grigio we get in Ontario. Maybe find New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc a little too aggressive and are just stuck in their Chardonnay rut. That Verdejo would work.
You know, even people, forget about people who are stuck in a Chardonnay rut, because these aren't genuine wine lovers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? These are wine drinkers, not wine appreciators. For wine appreciators, for those who appreciate a good bottle and know a little about, you don't have to be an expert, you know a little about, and you like to try a variety of things, this offers an outstanding option. Especially if you're having a dinner.
It's a perfect way of putting it. Hey, Conrad, thanks so much for joining me on the pod. I appreciate
it's been
it.
Been fun. Thanks so
yeah,
much.
Yeah. Right. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.